SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. I'm Craig Mish along with Davis Maddock. Happy July 4th for everyone yesterday. We're back on the air live today here on Sports Grid. We've got a lot to get to here on today's show. We'll dive a little deeper into NBA free agency. Also a little best ball fantasy football. I know I had my dynasty draft over the weekend. So I'll talk to Davis a little bit about that. And naturally a lot of Major League Baseball, Davis. So here we go. Month of July, getting closer and closer to training camp. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, about 2 weeks away from some teams practicing. I know the teams that play the Hall of Fame game got to get started a little bit earlier. And then it's full football. I know it's full football for you anyway, but good to see you again. How's everything?
You know, things are good. We are 30 days away from the Hall of Fame game, so that is going to be our first live television professional football game since the Super Bowl. So 30 days away from that, pretty exciting. We have some golf going on right now overseas. Guys are heading over there to get ready for the British Open, Scottish Open this weekend. They're all playing this pro am right now, and Wimbledon. We have an upset brewing here as the Joker lost the is down one set to Sinner, so sort of interesting there.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that for sure. Let's get to our headlines here on the show. A couple of really good matchups tonight. I'm going to the Miami LA Angels game this evening, but a lot of people will be watching this one. Max Scherzer expected to rejoin the New York Mets tonight. We'll see what ends up happening with that, and certainly he's been out I believe over a month if I'm not mistaken, so his return is imminent. And so is Jacob deGrom, by the way, who pitched this weekend in Port St. Lucie. So he's probably a couple weeks away, too. Victor Garrattini, the former Cub, hit a walk-off against his former team in the 10th inning for the Milwaukee Brewers. Wimbledon quarterfinals action underway, as we have discussed. And Paris Saint-Germain has fired their manager, Davis. So, I mean, I think probably you'd be best to speak about that and just what that means for soccer.
Look, you know, if you like the NBA trade deadline, if you like Kevin Durant requesting to be traded, if you like Major League Baseball trade deadline, right? Players to be named later, cash. I mean, there is nothing like a summer off in soccer when these guys are not playing an international competition, which they are not right now. So the World Cup would have been this summer, but is being played in Qatar. It's like 118 degrees during the day in Qatar, so they have moved it to the winter. So I think it's at least going to be like 80 or 90 degrees instead. I mean, the amount of rumors and you know, billions of dollars changing hands, and Cristiano Ronaldo wants to leave, and Neymar wants to leave, and managers are getting fired, and there's nothing like it. It is the best, you know, player movement window in professional sports, in my opinion. But PSG, kind of interesting at this time, because they are one of these organizations that is owned by a sovereign wealth fund. They are owned by the Qataris, not by Saudi Arabia, which is involved with the LIV Golf. And they just mess everything up. I mean, pretty much every offseason, they make a bunch of moves that make no sense. They spend, you know, $250 million, $500 million to do more moves that don't make sense. And then every year in the Champions League, they lose before they're supposed to. And I don't think the firing of Mauricio Pochettino, who I think is a very good manager, I don't think that it makes a ton of sense. But somebody, you know, when the heads have to roll when you lose, and you can't fire a player who makes, you know, $200 million a year, basically.
Yeah, no, definitely so. All right, so one free agent signing in the NBA today, TJ Warren, signs with the Brooklyn Nets. And a little surprising, I guess, Davis, because we're not really sure which way Brooklyn is headed, but I guess this fortifies whatever they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think this is a good signing based on what TJ Warren was, if we want to remember his time in the bubble. I mean, he was basically the best player in the bubble, and then really has not been healthy since 2020. But, you know, I mean, we're all sitting here waiting on bated breath. What is Kevin Durant going to do? What are the Nets going to do? I sort of feel like every single day that Kevin Durant remains a member of the Nets, it becomes more and more likely that he just plays for the Nets. Because I do think, in a way, the Nets can kind of call his bluff and be like, you're 34 years old. what do you have left? You know, 2 years of being an MVP candidate, 3 years maybe of being an MVP candidate. What are you going to do? You're going to sit out? You're going to sit out your age 34 season because we couldn't find a trade that we like? Now, it also seems like day by day, the Raptors are getting drawn into this because the Raptors have the best offer, right? Mm-hmm. Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, and a bunch of picks. Kevin Durant goes to the Raptors, Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent Jr., Pascal Siakam, Kevin Durant. I mean, that's a team that they would maybe even be the favorites in the Eastern Conference, pretty close to the Bucks. I think the Raptors should pick up the phone and make that trade, but it's never as simple, right, as of course you do the deal. It's Kevin Durant, right? I mean, he's 34 years old. Scottie Barnes might make 10 all-star teams, right? Guy's 21 years old. So it's there just are so many moving parts here.
Yeah, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this morning on FanDuel, Phoenix is still the favorite, followed by Miami, and then Brooklyn, and then you're right, and then Toronto has jumped into the mix here. Lakers, I think, are involved as well. But Phoenix, at least on FanDuel, looks to be the favorite, but we'll see. All right, we'll take a quick time out here on Fantasy Sports Today. If Kevin Durant signs, trust me, we'll be all over that at some point, either today, tomorrow, or even this week. But with NBA free agency in full force, we're going to take a closer look at two teams that are potentially going in next year. Boston Celtics coming off a great season, of course, getting to the NBA Finals. And the Minnesota Timberwolves, what will it mean for DFS and for fantasy with their approach in getting Rudy Gobert? We'll have that next for you right here on Fantasy Sports Today.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Believe it or not, we'll have the NBA back fast and furious here coming up after the summer. And so Davis and I thought it would be time for us to take a quick look at what some teams are up to, of course, in NBA free agency. And Davis, naturally, we're going to discuss two teams today here on the show. Boston coming off a great season. As you mentioned last week, a little bit cap heavy, so really hard for them to make any significant moves, but they have made a couple. And then obviously the Minnesota Timberwolves, Davis. I mean, look, it has been a really long time since they've been in a position to try and compete for the playoffs or even championship, or I should say go deep into the playoffs. And we'll dive into them a little bit too. I know that they're taking a lot of heat for the trade that they made with Rudy Gobert for sure. But I mean, who are we to say, man? Those fans are just like, come on, like we got to win something eventually. So let's get into Boston here a little bit and then we'll get into Minnesota.
So, I mean, I think everyone pretty much unanimously thought that this Malcolm Brogdon trade was a good one for the Boston Celtics. They were functioning as an over-the-cap team, which means they were not adding, you know, anyone, even with the taxpayer mid-level. They just were not going to add anyone who would be guaranteed to make their playoff rotation. For example, I don't think Danilo Gallinari. I would imagine Danilo is not going to play for them once they get to the play. I mean, maybe he'll play in the first round. Maybe he'll get 10 minutes a night in the second round. But by the time, you know, if they're playing the Bucks, if they're playing the Heat, if they make it to the NBA Finals again, Gallo is going to be out of the rotation, right? But I don't think the same is true of Malcolm Brogdon. He is basically just a better version of Derek White, better shooter, better passer, maybe a slightly better defender. I actually don't think he's going to start, though. I think they are going to start Al Horford and Robert Williams in the regular season, and Brogdon is going to be the sixth man off of the bench. The key point here is Marcus Smart, Defensive Player of the Year last year, absolute hero in the playoffs. You know, I mean, he was playing 41 minutes a night, playing amazing defense. He had to guard Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler and all these, you know, and Giannis and Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday in back-to-back series. And he has earned the right to be the starting point guard for the Boston Celtics. He has stated that many times in press conferences. He's, I'm our point guard. I want to be our point guard. I don't want to play off the ball. I don't want to come off the bench. And I think the organization should realize that. And I think that they should really value what Smart brings to them. So I imagine that their regular season rotation will be Smart at point guard. Then they're going to start Jaylen Brown at shooting guard, Tatum at small forward, and Robert Williams and Al Horford. But what did we just learn by the time the Celtics got to the finals? these dudes were beat. I mean, they were so tired. I mean, you could see Tatum in game six. It was like he could hardly even get off the ground. And I think a big idea behind this move is we want to be able to give Jason Tatum back-to-backs off. We want Jaylen Brown to be playing 36 minutes a night, not 41 minutes a night. We want Smart, if he hurts his elbow or bangs up his knee, which has happened to him over the last 2 years, we want him to be able to sit. That's also partly why they acquired Gallo, I think, as well. So I think this is a really good move for the regular season. It'll be very, very interesting to see if they do make it to the Eastern Conference Finals again. Do you just say, you know, Horford, you've done your best, you're a great player, you don't really fit right here, we're starting Malcolm. Like, that is going to be, Ime Udoka is going to have, I think he's going to have a sort of a juggling act, a balancing act there in the locker room. But yeah, I'm just really excited to see how Brogdon fits in with these guys.
Yeah, no, and look, the Celtics were, I mean, halfway through the NBA Finals, you know, still favored to win in some spots. So maybe this addition will get them over the top. We'll see, but you're right. A lot of injuries, by the way, to Boston during the playoffs, too. Guys playing and then not playing again. Counting on some of these older guys, hard to do for sure. All right, now, Timberwolves in a little bit of a different position, Davis. Now, what I was alluding to before is that it's pretty obvious that the Gobert trade was not great for them, for their future. But, you know, Davis, who are we to say, like, they have season ticket holders, you know? Like, they have these dedicated fans who've just been going to these games year after year without them winning. And so if they flub this trade, yeah, I mean, 5 years, it may not look great. They traded a lot of picks. But, you know, far be it from me to say it that, you know, to go against a team that is going for it. And maybe this won't last more than a year or two, but hard for me to indict this. I don't know. That's kind of my opinion on it.
That's where I ended as well. I mean, I clearly think it was an overpay. They gave up the equivalent of 6 first-round picks in this trade to acquire a 30-year-old Rudy Gobert, who by 2026 is going to cost $47.5 million against the salary cap. Now, remember, the salary cap is trending up. It went up 10% this year. It is likely to go up again over the next 2 years because what do we learn every time these leagues renegotiate their TV contracts? Live sports are the last bastion of advertising. If you want advertising, you pay to have it advertised during live sports. You don't, you know, you don't want it on Disney Plus. You don't want it on Hulu. You don't want it on Peacock, right? So these live sports still are going to keep, it's going to keep the money funneling into these leagues. And I think the Rudy Gobert fit for the regular season is really good for the Timberwolves, right? He is a low usage player, so he's not taking the ball out of Anthony Edwards' hands. He's not taking the ball out of Karl-Anthony Towns. Karl-Anthony Towns might be the best, you know, 7-foot-plus shooter in NBA history. He takes a bunch of threes. He's very effective at them. He can take them off the dribble. He can take them in the corner. He can take them above the break. And I think that going all in on your the last best player that the Timberwolves had was Kevin Garnett, and they soured on that situation, right? I don't believe they ever made a conference finals with Kevin Garnett on their roster. I'd have to go look that up, but I believe that is true. And that's unacceptable, right? It is unacceptable to have an all-time great NBA player in Kevin Garnett and never make the conference finals. And I think that the point you made is the most cogent one, which is that not every franchise is built equally. It's okay for the Los Angeles Lakers to miss out in the playoffs for 4 years in a row, right? It'll be fine. The franchise value is going to remain high. They're going to sell the season tickets, and they will always feel confident that they can land a free agent in the future. The Timberwolves have made it past the second round of the playoffs one time in 33 years. And I think if you ask a lot of people around the league, would the Timberwolves have beaten the Memphis Grizzlies in that series had they had Rudy Gobert? I think the answer is probably yes, because what ended up happening in the back end of that series was Steven Adams came in, Xavier Tillman came in, and they absolutely destroyed them on the glass. The Wolves were playing this blitzing and switching defense, which was entirely designed to make up for Kat's weaknesses, because Kat is not really on defense a center. He can't really protect the rim. He doesn't move fast enough, whereas Rudy Gobert is the best defensive center in the league, and it's not even close. So is it an overpay? 100%. Do I get it? Absolutely, right? The idea of making Karl-Anthony Towns a power forward on offense and pairing him with a guy who's going to make it so that he can kind of just hang out on defense. You know, Kat is going to be guarding guys who are standing in the corner, and I think that's fine. To me, the big question is, are they able to trade D'Angelo Russell as a positive asset instead of a negative asset? So will someone take D'Angelo Russell and give them something for it, whether it be salary relief, whether it be a pick, whether it be a player who might fit a little bit better next to Anthony Edwards? Because I think ideally you'd kind of want a Marcus Smart style guy where they'll stand in the corner and he's not going to need to initiate a bunch of possessions. If they're able to figure that out, for example, if they would have been able to get Brogdon, right? If they flipped Dar in a first round pick for Brogdon, I mean, that would have been, I think they could make the conference finals with that team. So we'll see what ends up happening there.
Yeah. Brett also passes along that the Timberwolves did get to the Western Conference Finals in the 2003-04 season. I don't remember that at all, but there you go. I don't know. Who would they have played, Brett, in that series, 2003?
The Lakers. I'm remembering. I'm like very vaguely remembering this now. Yeah. But I mean, it's still insane. One conference finals with Kevin Durant, maybe the best defensive big of all time. You know, I mean, the guy was unbelievable, right? It was Garnett versus Duncan, and how much more did Duncan win?
Yeah. No, it definitely makes sense there. Stephon Marbury, I'm thinking. I don't know. Was he on it by then? I don't know. All right. Going back in NBA history, not the easy thing to do. All right. Coming up next, Underdog Fantasy Football, Best Ball Mania 3. Is going on right now. We're going to give you a little bit of insight as to how to approach this next. So stay on the grid. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
July 23rd is when the earliest reporting dates can be in the NFL for training camp. The 26th looks like for most teams is when it begins. And so those of you who are getting ready to play season-long fantasy football, probably a good idea, Davis, to get involved in Best Ball Mania right now, because we're just a few weeks away from us talking fantasy football almost every single day here on this show. Best Ball Mania 3 is going on right now, courtesy of Underdog. Let everybody know how they can get involved.
Yep, great time to get signed up on Underdog Fantasy, free app, App Store, Google Play, you know, whatever type of phone you have. It's in the App Store. Use the promo code GRID. You're going to get a free entry into Best Ball Mania 3, which is the largest fantasy football tournament in world history, over 400,000 entries, $25 to enter. You're going to enter into a 12-man league. You're going to draft 18 players. The playoffs start in week 15. The field gets cut then. Then again in week 16, culminating in a 480-person final. In week 17, $2 million to first place, $1 million to second place, $1 million to the regular season champion. Millions and millions of dollars are going to be won in Best Ball Mania 3. And Craig, I certainly hope to be one of those newly minted millionaires in Best Ball Mania 3. I can't wait.
All right, so head on over to Underdog, download the app, and get involved right now. Some tips here for some potential boom or bust players. Let's talk about, Davis, how you kind of see some of the players we're going to talk about today. Looks like we're hitting on two wide receivers and a running back. And I think that, you know, most people obviously very familiar with these guys as well.
So the first guy we are going to start with here is Elijah Moore, second round pick last year, was, I think, very good in a limited sample for the New York Jets. He averaged, this is actually true, he averaged just about 8.6 fantasy points per game in games that Zach Wilson started. But Craig, he averaged over 20 fantasy points per game in the games that Mike White and Josh Johnson started. Now, I think part of that is, I mean, one, small sample size, right? Anything can happen in two, three games of football. And then I think the other thing is Zach Wilson, to me, kind of defined rookie quarterback trying to do too much. Every time he dropped back, he was trying to hit the home run. You know, he was, I think we saw the greatest discrepancy in this with how much the running backs were targeted when Mike White and Josh Johnson were in versus when Zach Wilson was in. He was just never taking the easy throw. It was always, you know, rolling out to his right, off his back foot. I personally am anticipating Zach Wilson playing much better this season than he did last year, or maybe not even anticipating it, but just betting on it, because I think it is one of the few edges that can be found in the fantasy football market this year. And I think it's really exemplified by Elijah Moore, who projects to pretty easily lead this team in targets, I think. A three wide receiver set of Elijah Moore, first round pick Garrett Wilson, and Corey Davis, assuming an improvement in performance from Zach Wilson. I think we could see a 90 catch season, you know, a 10 touchdown season from Elijah Moore pretty easily. And I just think he's really good. I mean, kind of at the end of the day, we can talk about, you know, correlations and advance rates and statistical profiles. But really, at the end of the day, I just think Zach Wilson is good, or Elijah Moore is good. I think he can get open. And I think that what we're really hoping to see is him taking a commanding lead in the slot role for the New York Jets. If they are asking him to primarily play outside, he might struggle a little bit. You know, it's just hard to be an outside wide receiver facing the best cornerbacks every single day. But I would imagine he profiles as their primary slot wide receiver.
Braxton Berrios back there again with the Jets?
He is, yeah. So he signed basically the same deal as Jameson Crowder, 2 years, $8 million. I believe the second year is non-guaranteed, though. But he is there, and he could definitely be a thorn in our side.
All right, so we'll see there with Elijah Moore, who again, as Davis mentioned, Mike White, my gosh, those two games that he played, he was amazing, and then kind of turned into a pumpkin again. All right, now let's go to running back, and a frustrating season, I think, for a lot of people last year owning Javonte Williams, because his numbers obviously could have been a lot better, but Melvin Gordon was there, and Melvin Gordon was good, not great. Williams was better, for sure. Gordon's back again, Davis. So, you know, I mean, different coaching staff, you know, they certainly could, you know, change this to a 70-30 split if they wanted to. I ended up with Gordon on my fantasy teams last year. I was very happy with Melvin Gordon until the end of the season. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think ends up happening here? Because I know what everybody wants in fantasy, but that's not the way that this works.
I mean, it is really unbelievable just how much they split work right down the middle. They both had exactly 203 carries last season. Javonte had 1,200 scrimmage yards. Melvin Gordon had 1,100 scrimmage yards. Javonte scored 7 touchdowns, with 3 of them coming via reception. Melvin Gordon scored 10 touchdowns. Javonte is obviously being drafted at the higher end of his range of outcomes, but I think there are lots of reasons to be interested in him at this price. The first being this offense could be truly amazing, right? Russell Wilson is about as big of a year-over-year upgrade as you're going to find, right? Going from Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater to Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell Wilson is so much better than those guys. So the Broncos should score more points. They should be winning more games. You know, really would not be surprising if the Broncos were maybe second or third in the league in total scoring. That's a huge advantage. Obviously, Melvin Gordon might get injured. There's not really a third running back on the roster. Mike Boone and DeMaurier Crockett are the other running backs on the roster. Can't imagine if Melvin Gordon were to be injured that those guys would be playing a ton. And then also, Javonte is just probably a lot better than Melvin Gordon. And how many times have we seen this? The example I always come back to is Thomas Jones and Jamal Charles, where there was that 1 year where Thomas Jones got more carries than Jamal Charles. And people like you and I were just tearing our hair out going like, how is this possible? How are you giving Thomas Jones all these carries? Like, he's freaking Jamal Charles. Just give him the ball. And then what happened the next year? Jamal Charles was the number one player in fantasy, right? Because right. it just became so obvious. The coaching staff was like, all right, you know, Thomas, thank you for your service, but like, let's just give the ball to the guy who's clearly better. So I think those are kind of the three distinct ways that Javonte can pay out. He is definitely, I think Brett has this right, definitely boom or bust, definitely a lightning rod player at his cost. I think if he was like a fourth rounder, then potentially he would just be like everyone's favorite value running back pick. But at the tail end of the second round, you do kind of have to be wishing on Javonte.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, handcuffing Gordon doesn't really help you at all. I mean, you're ending up having to play both guys. So it'll be an interesting dynamic for sure. All right. I noticed on social media, you've been talking a lot about Gabriel Davis of the Buffalo Bills. Boy, I mean, I don't know, Davis. This feels a lot like Metcalf from 2 years ago, a lot like Debo last year. Like, it does feel that, you know, Gabriel Davis could be that receiver because he's got the quarterback there. Diggs a little bit older. It does feel like there's a huge boom possibility for Gabriel Davis. And I think a lot of people see that, though. I think that's kind of the issue going in.
I mean, it's like everyone you talk to has a different opinion on this, and we're kind of in these camps now. Like, I'm definitely in the pro Gabriel Davis camp, where I just think he is phenomenal. I think the fact that the team invested no capital at wide receiver, I think it was a fifth round pick on Khalil Shakir. They gave Jameson Crowder a 1 year, $4 million deal that's like half incentives. I believe they could even cut Jameson Crowder if they wanted to for only like $300,000 of dead cap. They gave Isaiah McKenzie a 2 year, $7 million deal that again is really full of incentives. They gave OJ Howard a 1 year, $5 million deal. They tried to sign JD McKissick. He returned to the Washington Commanders. They drafted James Cook in the second round. The reasons why I'm in a Gabriel Davis are, one, I think the Bills, you know, could be one of the teams that lead the NFL in total passing attempts. So let's say they get to 700 passing attempts as a team. A 20% target share of 700 passing attempts is right about 140 targets. That would be more than enough for Gabriel Davis to pull this off. Two, similar to Elijah Moore, I just think he's really good. And so I think that he is maybe even potentially good enough to pull kind of into an even sort of timeshare with Gabriel Davis in terms of with Stephon Diggs as being the number one overall wide receiver. And also for the format that we are playing on Underdog, where it's best ball and I don't have to choose when to start him, when not to start him, and I get to bank all of his points. So it doesn't matter if he scores 37 points in week two and then 4 points in week three because he's being used as a deep threat. I'm banking those 37 points, and the weeks where he has 8 points or goes 4 for 40 or whatever, that I'm using someone else's score. You know, I'm using, or just, you know, it just doesn't matter. So I am firmly on team Gabriel Davis. I understand there's a huge bust risk, but I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head, Craig. It just feels like he is Debo or DK Metcalf. I think the best example is Chris Godwin the year after Vincent Jackson moved on from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when it was it was the 2019 season with Jameis and Fitzpatrick, where we were drafting him really highly and he hadn't really done it yet, and then he just blew everyone away. I think he finished wide receiver 8 that season. So that is kind of the historical archetype that I'm putting Gabriel Davis in.
Yeah, no, it definitely feels like it's headed that way. But again, has to happen, has to stay healthy. But in this day and age of football, with especially like a team like Buffalo that doesn't run the ball almost at all, I mean, you got to think that there's going to be enough targets for this guy as he emerges in fantasy football. Again, go to the Underdog app, download it, check out Best Ball 3, and have some fun. Get involved. As Davis said, millions of dollars at stake before fantasy football, you know, season-long leagues begin, where you're drafting with all of your friends come August and September. All right, we'll take a quick time out here on the show. Coming up next time for some fantasy or reality, so stay on the grid. For those of you who last left us last week, Stranger Things is one of the topics we talked about. Well, we've now had a few days to digest that, and Davis and I will touch on that and a whole lot more next, right here on Sports.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Sports Grid, so stay on the grid. More fantasy sports today is coming up in just a few minutes. Don't go away.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back, Fantasy Sports Today. Make sure you are following us on Twitter, on social media, at SportsGrid, at SportsGrid TV, for the latest news, notes, information, picks against the spread, and of course, all of our great shows and great programming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Hopefully you enjoyed your July 4th. Davis, I believe when we last talked, you said that you were headed to a wedding. So I hope you had a great time, and hopefully you were able to partake in some festivities yesterday.
We did. We did take part of some festivities. The wedding, though, Craig, this I wonder if you've been in a similar situation. It was out in the country, you know, kind of out at one of these, you know, farmhouse, you know, redecorated banquet hall type places. Craig, there was no cell phone reception. Not a bar. Not I couldn't, you know, standing up on the roof, holding my phone up, trying to, you know, check the golfing scores. I got nothing. We were out there for like 4 hours. It was like a tech detox. And I got to be honest, I did not enjoy it.
Yeah. I've had that issue pop up. I can't say all that recently, but there is this highway in Florida. It's called Alligator Alley. It's all the way west. It takes you basically from South Florida west all the way up. There's about an hour where you get no service, and usually when I'm on that highway, it's a little freaky, but in general, usually have service. Can't believe they didn't have any Wi-Fi though. I mean, that's very surprising that was not available. Usually they do. All right, let's get to some fantasy or reality. Well, I was fortunate to partake in a barbecue yesterday, so I did consume barbecue on July 4th. Naturally, it's a rite of passage in the morning to head on over to Coney Island, or if you're not there, watch it on television to see the hot dog eating contest. I believe it's still the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. And naturally, that goes on, and usually if you're home, you flip it on. Fantasy reality, Davis, you watch the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, and obviously by now everyone knows the name. Joey Chestnut is the popular hot dog eater every year, and winner, by the way.
Yeah, buddy, this is a fantasy. Now, Craig, you know I love gambling. Nothing really kind of gets me going like gambling, and by the time I just had even collected my thoughts enough to start gambling on this, all the numbers I had available to me were super stale. It was like minus 130 on both sides. Mm. The lines had already been bet into. So I just wasn't, I was not able to get any wagers down on the hot dog eating contest. And if I don't have money on a competition, I'm not watching it. So instead of watching the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, I was watching Xander Shiffley shoot, I believe, a 63 over at Adair Manor at the JP McManus Pro-Am in Ireland. So this is a fantasy for me, and I was also watching a bit of the tennis as well, because Nick Kyrgios was playing over at Wimbledon. So fantasy for me. I did not watch the hot dog eating contest. Just doesn't really do it for me in general.
Yeah, I've watched it for many years. Especially fun when Joey Chestnut was facing Kobayashi, I believe that was his name, and the competition was stiff. But now Joey Chestnut just wins every single time. I did not watch this live, so it is a fantasy for me, but I did see the clips, Davis. I don't know if you saw this, but somebody rushed the stage, and then Joey Chestnut, yes, like got the guy in a headlock and threw him down. Like, I mean, I don't know. And he had a cast on his foot nonetheless. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but Joey Chestnut, probably the all-time most popular competitive eater in U.S. history. But no, I did not watch this live. The Marlins played the Nationals 11 a.m. Plus, I was at my brother's house. We were at the pool doing other things. So fantasy for me live. Nonetheless, I am aware of what happened in that yesterday. All right, let's move on to the NBA. Dallas Mavericks clearly need to make a very big push this year toward winning an NBA title. They have arguably one of the best players in the NBA, Luka Doncic. And, you know, Luka was pretty vocal about saying that he wanted the dragon on his team, Goran Dragic, who did not end up signing with the Dallas Mavericks. Fantasy reality, Davis, the Mavericks made a mistake by, you know, hurting their guy, Luka, for not signing the dragon.
I mean, this is 100% obvious, right? I mean, it's like the Dallas Mavericks, you have one job as an NBA franchise, and that is keep Luka Doncic happy, right? Same thing, Minnesota Timberwolves, what's your job? Do everything in your power to keep Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns' eyes from wandering, right? When you are not the Lakers, the Clippers, the Knicks, the Celtics, I'm not even going to put the Knicks in there because they're so laughable, but if you're not one of these marquee NBA franchises and you are blessed enough to be given a superstar, right? Pelicans with Anthony Davis, what happened? They didn't build a winning team around him. He's out. What are they worried about with Zion Williamson right now? You know, they just traded away assets to get CJ McCollum before Zion had even signed his Supermax extension because they don't even want to be worrying about it. Now, Doncic, I believe, has already signed his Supermax but is not on it yet. So it would be hard for him to leave. But, I mean, what Kevin Durant has 4 years left on his deal, and he said, I'm out. So we are in the player empowerment era. And what is Goran Dragic going to cost you against the cap? I believe he signed the veteran minimum now, which right. At his service time, he's been in the, I think it's his 13th year in the NBA. So at his service time, that's like a $3 million deal. But I mean, this is just so obvious. He's a fine backup point guard. I mean, is he going to win an NBA championship? Probably not. But he's a fine backup point guard. Like, get Goran Dragic for this is so like this is I think this is bad. I think this is really bad business by the Mavericks, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy reality just because he was so cheap. And by the way, wherever he goes, he's very well liked too. So I think that he could have helped Dallas at least off the bench a little bit. I know what they thought about him here in Miami. You know, they had to make the trades that they made in order to get the players they got. But, you know, very clearly he was a very, very Davis popular player here. Yeah, so a reality, as you said, it especially when it does not really cost a lot, you know, and basically the way that we used to put it, Davis in sports, is that let Goran be Luka's caddy, right? Like, I mean, if that's yes. what it comes down to, that's what it is. Let him carry the bag for a few years, you know, and listen, that's the way that it works. I think Dallas may have messed up here, but I guess time will tell on that too. Dallas falls short of anything, I think, except the West Finals. It's a disappointing season for them, no doubt. All right, Stranger Things, the second part of it, launched over the weekend on Friday. And fortunately enough, I got to say, it took me a while to get through this. And it was good, but it did take me some time. I mean, it is long, 2.5 hours.
No spoilers. No spoilers, Craig. I'm not there yet.
Okay. It took me a long time. I got through it. And, well, I mean, we have to have a part of the spoiler here. I don't know. Brett, how do we get around this? I don't think there's any way around it. All right.
So I've already seen the highlight of what you're okay. about to add. Like, I already know, roughly.
Okay. So one of the characters in the movie ends up having playing a Metallica song, and this is Master of Puppets. It's a very long song. It goes very long also in the movie as well. We've seen how popular Kate Bush's song made the first part of Stranger Things, for sure. Now, let's get into Metallica here a little bit. Davis, I don't know your familiarity here, so we'll find out. Master of Puppets is a top 3 Metallica song, fantasy reality.
So, I got reality here because just when Metallica is used in a movie, when Metallica is used in television, just when we are thinking about the legacy of Metallica, it's like... it's Master of Puppets and it's Enter Sandman. Those are kind of the two big songs. Now, am I a Metallica fan? I am not. This missed me somehow. And I think, by the way, the reason why Metallica was never that popular for people my age or just maybe the people I was running around with, I literally do think it was because of the Napster stuff. Because Metallica became the face of corporate record labels and not wanting people to download their music, and they were the face of that lawsuit against Napster, basically. And I think for the younger generation, I think that made them not cool. I think that made them corporate rock. I really do think that kind of, you know, hurt their legacy anyway. Which obviously, like, it's a good song. When I hear a Metallica song, I'm like, they're fine. But they don't kind of have that same edge to them that other bands of those times that, you know, kind of went the other way, that were like, yeah, download our songs, like, do whatever, kind of did. So I got reality here, but not a big Metallica guy.
Yeah, so this Metallica's in my wheelhouse as far as the era of music for me. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is like 80s and 90s as like the peak, yeah. Late 80s and 90s, right? So there's no question to me that Enter Sandman is, so two parts here. Enter Sandman, in terms of popularity, I think that that's probably number one. I personally think that Unforgiven is another one, a slow song from them. I think that that is above this one too. This could be number 3, but I would probably say, I'm going to say fantasy Davis, because I think that, that as you mentioned, there are diehard Metallica fans from the 80s who would tell you that none of their stuff was like pop music, not popular rock, but was a lot better than the stuff that they put out later on, which, you know, made them more mainstream.
I mean, so that's kind of the way with all really popular bands, right? Is the real fans will be like, oh, you got to listen to this B-side, you know, and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. And so Metallica was, you know, part of a heavy metal part of music in the 80s that was, you know, supreme. Now, I never was really into it, but I had awareness of who they were. I would never, like, consider going to a concert of theirs. But then all of a sudden in the 90s, these other songs come out, these ballads sort of come out. And the hair band stuff comes out. And that's really when Metallica took off. So I am going to say fantasy here for the real Metallica fans. I'm going to guess that they would say Master of Puppets is not in the top three. And I just mentioned the other two as far as popularity. There's no question. I think there's no question the other two are more popular. And plus, Davis, the other thing with this song is like 7 minutes or 8 minutes. Like, I mean, you can't really get, you know, put your arms around that these days. I mean, can you imagine right now put on your favorite channel on satellite radio or something, just popping anything on randomly and hearing a 7 minute song? Who has that attention?
Never.
No one.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's kind of like the lost art of the album too. Like, you know, Pink Floyd albums, they always, the songs would always kind of merge into each other. Right. So, like for example, Wish You Were Here, which is my favorite Pink Floyd song. It has the car radio turning on. That they were like literally actually recorded in their car. That comes over from the end of I don't even remember the name of the song now, but it's like that is such a lost art of the songs transitioning from one to the other, because that's not the way music is meant to be digested anymore. You know, it comes on. You know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds is like that. That's ideal, right? You know, the way you really make it as an artist right now is getting your song like popular on TikTok. That's how you make it. So they got to be short.
Yeah, they used to, you know, obviously it started with records, and that was, you know, one, you know, the needle just moves from one to the other. Well, I started with 8-tracks, but I'm too young for 8-tracks, but the records, it moved from one needle to the next. Then from the tape, you know, they wouldn't dare put a song at the end of the first side of a tape before you had to flip it, Davis. Like, there would not be that. Right. And then obviously, you know, CDs, right? Just CD from one to the next. And yeah, that's all gone. So. Fun times, though. Definitely would say going to the CD store, tape store, record store, buying records. All right, we got to take a quick time out here on the show. Coming up next is time for the Sports Grid 60. So we'll wrap it up after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For those of you who are leaving us here on Sports Grid, hope you have a great day. I would also invite you to come back 2:00 Eastern for Newswire. Daniel Wallach will be on the show today, as well as Simon Bohr talking some soccer. So hopefully you will stick around for that. Let's wrap up our show today and turn it over to Davis with a final opinion on the show. Here is the Sports Grid 60.
You know, I just want to use this time to voice my appreciation for Brian Windhorst. You know, Shams and Woj and Zach Lowe get most of the love for national NBA media, right? But this 2-minute clip of Brian Windhorst on First Take last week has really just taken on a life of its own, where Windhorst is, you know, expounding on, now, why would Brooklyn trade away a first-round pick? Why would the Utah Jazz trade away Royce O'Neal, friends with Donovan Mitchell? You know, why would they trade away Royce O'Neal for a first-round pick? What's going on? We have to ask ourselves. And it is a hilarious 2 minutes of television. But I also, the memes, the Twitter memes, Instagram, you know, all this stuff that have come from this Windhorst moment, it has really taken on a life of its own. And every once in a while, there's just one of these memes born from sports that just every time I log on, I'm looking forward to. And it's definitely one of them.
All right. I want to end the show with a little caveat before we begin. I do not have pets that are affected by this. But Boy, a lot of people on social media are seemingly gathering around saying, hey, it's time to put a curfew on July 4th fireworks because of their pets just being completely freaked out. And everyone is talking about it and everyone is sort of mentioning it. I'm sort of wondering why it's peaking right now over the last couple of years as opposed to years past. Maybe it's just because the invent of social media and all for July 4th fireworks, but I'm sort of seemingly on board here. Like, why torment your pets? And why have this happen at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning? Maybe there should be some sort of curfew when you have to stop. I don't know. We'll see. All right, that'll do it for the show. Thanks again to LPN for Danny and Ryan in the graphics, and our producer, Brett Levy, my co-host, Davis Maddock. I'm Craig Mish. See you at 2 o'clock Eastern for the next one.